and welcome to part two of your birthday reading. Welcome as well to Aries Rising and Aries Moon. My name is Eric Francis, back with additional thoughts about your solar return chart and the astrology of the moment. I'd mentioned at the close of the last session, I was going to talk about the relationship of fire and water. And it brings to mind something that a painter who lives on my street, really beautiful painter, actually, who does these kind of primal scenes and does murals, and he's made something of his talent. And we were talking about painting one day, and he said that there was one of the great masters, who I don't remember who it was, but it doesn't really affect the point, which is that he liked to paint the natural world in green, which much of it is in green. And he said that before he painted green on the canvas, he would lay down a red wash over the canvas so that he was always painting green on a kind of embedded background of red. And I thought immediately, well, red's opposite color, as far as I know, on the color wheel is green. And so in that way, when you look at red, it evokes green. And he was, and Kevin said, right. And what he's working with is to kind of enhance the impact of the green he was presenting by laying a layer of red underneath it. And that is one way that you can think of the relationship between fire and water in astrology, and especially the relationship between fire and water in your particular chart. As I've mentioned a few times, the sky right now is really a study in fire and water. Back about maybe 5 years ago, I wrote a piece which seems like yesterday. There are certain articles that seem like I wrote them yesterday, and they always seem like I wrote them yesterday, only it was half a decade ago. And the piece was called something like How to Cross an Ocean, How to Start a Fire. And I wrote that at the time when Uranus entered Aries, concurrently with Chiron entering Pisces. So we had two planets that have somewhat comparable energy signatures, though Chiron is more focused and more refined, I think, than Uranian energy. But they're still high energy. You could still use the word intense to describe both of them in a similar way. Uranus entered a fire sign after a long trip through Pisces, and then Chiron entered water sign Pisces after a long trip through Aquarius. And they're moving at about the same average rate right now. Uranus is moving a little bit quicker, but basically it's taking them both about 7 to 8 years to cross their respective signs. So they're moving kind of in a parallel. And it occurred to me that really what we have going on as a long-term thing is a study between a study of the kind of contrast and relationship between fire and water in the form of the most fiery fire sign Aries and the most watery water sign Pisces. And these signs have many other contrasts. One is the first sign of the zodiac, Aries. One is the last sign of the zodiac. So you get a lot of contrast between Aries and Pisces, and yet they are adjoining one another. I've mentioned this a few times, where the real opposite signs in astrology are the ones that are adjoining one another, not the ones that are across the spectrum from one another. One way to think of that is that let's use Pisces and Virgo as a comparison. They're both feminine signs. They're both mutable signs. Only one is an earth sign and one is a water sign. But water and earth have a lot in common. They both tend to go down. They mingle well. And so there's quite a bit of harmony between two signs that astrology likes to say are opposite signs. But if you take the contrast of Pisces and Aries, you have a mutable water sign and a cardinal fire sign. Again, the most watery of the water signs and the most fiery of the fire signs, and where we find them is next to one another. And that is a kind of a template of the relationship between fire and water. And it's very active in your chart. It's influential in all the fire sign and water sign charts. But because so much of the main action of the astrology of the spring of 2016, and indeed a much longer phase of time, is happening in Aries, and then there's quite a bit going on in Pisces, outer planets in both signs, which is how you know that you've got, you know, kind of a special attention focused on those signs, is that planets that are slow and take their time to move across a sign, and planets to whom other planets come rather than to whom yours go, usually. Of course, those slow planets do make transits to other things. But if we watch just the transiting sky, we see these slow movers moving, and then things constantly coming along, like the sun and the moon and the inner planets, to visit them. And so, as an Aries, or someone with a strong Aries signature, such as Aries rising, even Saturn in Aries, or Chiron in Aries, the moon in Aries, you are strongly influenced by what is going on in Pisces right now, because there is so much happening. And the relationship of Pisces to Aries is as if the Pisces layer, the watery layer, is like that red wash laid on the canvas before the canvas is painted green, which, by the way, I'm going to try soon. I'm going to do a study and just see here in my experimental phase of mixing paints. And so it's as if you are a fiery character, but that is supported, and that fiery flavor, that fiery color, is being informed by the underlying layer of water beneath you. And there's quite a bit of it. And the planets are in relationship to one another. They're kind of dancing in this energetic dance. They are commingling. And just in terms of the kind of the volume and intensity of the planets, there's a bit more water going on because the planet Neptune, the Lord of Waters, is in Pisces. And you can think of that whole Pisces realm as a kind of a hidden dimension of who you are that is operating below the surface, below the visible or perceivable through normal perception layer of your psyche. And one way to think of that is that beneath the obvious passion that you bring to life, this kind of impetuousness and daring and initiative that we so count on Aries to bring, and this despite the fact that there can be considerable special kinds of insecurity associated with Aries, below that, beneath that, not so visible, is a profound sensitivity, and in addition to that, there is a receptiveness. So Aries is usually credited as being a kind of a yang thing, expressive and assertive and kind of pushing out, you know, as suggested by your planet Mars. And Pisces is much more receptive. More than being expressive, it's as if it is absorbent, and it takes special conditions to get Pisces to be working at its full level of expressive intensity. And this level of expressive intensity can be challenging and uncomfortable for some people with a powerful Pisces signature. But for you, you are a natural at expressing and dancing around on the table in front of all the adults as a little child, as I've heard one Aries tell the story of her Aries-ness. But below that, in a sublime dimension of you, is this this absorbent, receptive, sensitive, feeling being. Now, let's just remember that those two things are operating now at about as close to full strength as they can get. Now let's look at another place in the zodiac where fire and water are powerfully lit up. And one of the reasons, or perhaps the main reason, that they're lit up now, what's making this a discussion about now, is that the planet associated with Aries, your, quote, ruling, unquote, planet, meaning the planet associated with your sign that follows certain rules in the chess game of astrology. So it's kind of like ruling by the rules. Is Mars, and Mars is in a fire sign, that fire sign being Sagittarius. And there is also Saturn in Sagittarius, and there are a whole diversity of minor planets in Sagittarius, though that number is gradually dwindling. But the presence of Mars and Saturn is what you might think of as a spiritually expressive state of being. It's as if there is extra drive that is associated with your kind of quest for who you are. And this quest is intensified by the combination of Saturn and Mars together. Saturn and Mars have kind of a quality of a pipe bomb, you might say. And I don't mean this in a violent sense, but the metaphor might be instructive. Let's say you were to take a couple of ounces of normal black gunpowder and put them on the kitchen table on a dish and take a Bic lighter to it. The combination of chemicals would basically fizzle powerfully hot, make a lot of smoke, and maybe a little bit of flames, stink up the room, and burn out. If you were to take that same ounce or two of black powder and put it inside of a pipe and seal the pipe and then put a fuse in there, the explosive force, the kinetic energy of the combustion of the black powder would push against the barrier of the pipe and make a bomb that would blow the room apart. And so the combination of Mars and Saturn can work like that. And when Mars and Saturn are together, it's important to provide a kind of an outward vent for the energy. Now, the connection, how we jumped from Aries to Sagittarius is because Mars is in Sagittarius. And so where Mars goes, the story of Aries goes. And Saturn is already there. And so there is an intense burning quest for self-discovery, because that's what the ninth house can represent. Saturn is there, and Mars is there, and there's other high-energy, small, but really significant planets. And now Mars is about to go retrograde. It does this every 2 years. Last did it in Libra in 2014. That's why we call the 2014 annual the Mars effect, because it was a study in Mars retrograde in Libra. And now Mars is going to be retrograde in Sagittarius. And it is going to retrograde back. It's going to take it a couple of months. Let's get some exact dates up on the screen here. April 7. And now we're looking for Mars at, pardon me while I do this calculation, which would take longer were I doing it manually, Mars at 2959 of Scorpio. And Mars is going to get to Scorpio on May 27th. So Mars is going to go retrograde on the 17th, and it's going to take it a little shy of 6 weeks to reach Scorpio. And so what it's doing is it is weaving together a fire sign, Sagittarius, and a water sign, Scorpio. And it's especially significant because Mars is also the ruling planet of Scorpio. Mars rules, in classical astrology, Mars rules two signs, Aries, its day house, and Scorpio, its night house. And so Mars is going to move from a bright, fiery sign, Sagittarius, into expressive, by the way, bright, fiery, expressive, extroverted sign, Sagittarius, into a warmer, darker, more introverted, more, let's say, inwardly directed, more secretive than expressive sign, Scorpio, and it will return to its other home. So it's as if you're kind of going to, you represented by Mars, are going to your other home, Scorpio. And in this way, the Mars retrograde process, which has been going on for much of the year, it began when Mars entered Scorpio a few months ago and slowly slowly moved across Scorpio and then went into Sagittarius, is now going to come back to Scorpio and continue this process of weaving together Scorpio and Sagittarius and Aries, your sign. So we have more contrast now between fire and water in terms of the fire sign Sagittarius being the host of Mars and the water sign Scorpio about to be the host of Mars. And it's especially meaningful because Mars is going to station direct in Scorpio and carry with it that Scorpio energy. And what this to me represents is a similar thing between Pisces and Aries, which is that we have a typically expressive house, the ninth, and an expressive sign, Sagittarius, and an expressive planet, Mars, about to go retro, introverted, retrograde, inwardly seeking, in a sense going silent and reviewing and going back in space and time and consciousness and deeper into the psyche. And this is the image of Mars retrograding from Sag in your ninth to Scorpio in your eighth. And additionally, highlighting the eighth house, we have a kind of a different expression of emotion, a different expression of eroticism, and this is of the deep surrender kind. And so we have the ninth and Sag adjoining, the ninth and Sag expressive and searching and seeking, often outwardly. Now Mars goes retrograde and seeks inwardly and winds up in a very inwardly focused sign, which is Scorpio. And an inwardly expressed house, which is the eighth, in a sense there's a kind of a parallel world inside the eighth house that we share only with our most intimate partners and with the people who tend to show up around the taboo subject matter of sex and death. So we experience these things in an intimate way, and then there's kind of these less intimate interlopers who are hanging around there, and then also people who start off as strangers and who end up as friends, or hopefully friends, and those being marital partners and relationship partners who enter our lives as people we just meet and shake hands with for the first time, and then they end up being among the most intimate people in our lives, the people that we share the secrets that we share with, the people that we share the resources that we have with, the people who get to know us in an unvarnished way, basically shorn of theory, with whom we not only reveal secrets, but with whom we create secrets. And so the implication here is that beneath the spiritual level of your life, beneath the questing level, beneath the level where you seek questions of who you are in a kind of an outwardly directed questing way, where you might journey, where you might get to know yourself in a certain way, Mars is going to retrograde back, and we're going to go deeper beneath that seemingly spiritual quest and find out that there is a watery, emotional, much more difficult to describe quest that is closely associated with your experiences of erotic intimacy, both with yourself and with others, and where the where you make peace with and at least establish a relationship with the idea and the experience of surrender. And so looked at one way, this is the shadow side of spirituality, but looked at another way, it's based on an understanding that can be demonstrated biologically and philosophically in many other ways, that underlying the spiritual quest is a deeper sexual reality. And it's now up to you to turn that deeper sexual reality into a quest for self-knowledge, a quest for self-understanding, and to more fully, consciously embark on that journey, not as a concept, but as a thing that you actually do. Not as a book that you read, but as a place you go in yourself, and then ultimately a place that you go with others. So this is a real journey. It is a real quest. And the contrast between fire and water is a meaningful one for you. And the thing with fire and water is that water is almost always cooler than fire. And so you may experience a kind of a cooling off, but then you bring the heat to that less fiery, expressive place in the form of your Mars, in the form of your curiosity, in the form of your passion and your desire to seek and to understand. And I would propose that on this most meaningful journey, where you leave behind a version of the spiritual quest and you embark upon a version of the emotional, inward, erotic quest, that the most effective tool that you can bring with you is your curiosity. Your desire to know and your desire to understand are the things that will guide you. And it is possible that when you get into that space, you're going to experience some fear, you're going to experience some uncertainty, you're going to experience a certain lack of direct knowledge. But if you bring your curiosity, you will at least have a guiding spirit that helps you, let's say, direct your intention and direct your quest. I know that people are suspicious of curiosity. I happen to not be suspicious of curiosity. That may be because it is the thing that drives my life the most. It may be because in whatever capacity I'm expressing myself, I consider it all the same thing, and I use curiosity as creative fuel. And this is especially important when you're entering the Scorpionic realm, where there is a very quiet but constant kind of, let's say, a composting reaction going on, where nothing is the same for very long, where there is a constant, let's say, mixing, blending, breaking down, and recombination of the elements. And this, by the way, in case you have an astrology notebook or you're just curious about the stuff, is one of the hallmarks of the fixed signs, which are supposed to be fixed. But you might say that the key word of the fixed signs is the only constant is change. And Scorpio embodies this, because what's going on inside Scorpio is this, as I say, this constant recombination and then breakdown and recombination of the elements. Now you're going to insert yourself in that, and it's as if your Mars, the planet that represents you and that represents your desire nature, is going to absorb that process of recombination, breakdown, recombination, breakdown, and embody that. And then we'll station retrograde and we'll proceed forward into back all the way through the last 7 degrees of Scorpio, and then gathering speed gradually into the late summer, Northern Hemisphere summer, and into the autumn, carry that energy of recombination with it. Let's just get a quick date here. Mars is back in the first degree of Scorpio on August 5th. A little bit sooner, so early August, and then back in, and then it will make a conjunction to Saturn, where there is a kind of a, let's say, what you might think of as a proving moment or a moment of truth. This is strange. I'm not seeing Saturn on this. Hold on one second, please bear with me. Points. Okay. Now we've got it. I'm just doing this in real time. Then the combination of Mars to Saturn is on August 24th. And by that time, Mars has made it now out to about 10 degrees. And so around August 24th, there is a kind of a meeting of your newly found transformational process associated with your desire nature, with your deeper inward emotional nature, and this breakdown recombination thing. We need to give this a name. That's pretty good, though. This breakdown recombination process meets Mars, where you get to have a kind of a spiritual breakthrough, where you might say that the less organic concepts of spirituality that we have, and pretty much, I mean, most of them are complete fabrications, right? We have very little actual organic spirituality in our society. We're, for the most part, spirituality is a kind of an artifice. There are some few fortunate people who are able to go out into nature and realize they're sitting in the middle of God. And there are people who are able to look up at the night sky and perceive the cosmos and realize they are sitting in the middle of God. There are those few, and maybe everyone has a little part of themselves that has this. However, most spirituality is a construction. It is a mental construction that is promulgated by some form of an institution, written down in a book, and then attempted to be imposed on people. And we all have some of that as well. And now you're going to experience the organic curiosity, the organic connection to the cosmos, a completely natural experience of what spirituality is. And as that conjunction to Mars happens, there will be a kind of an inner confrontation where it looks as if you get to make a decision about what is really true for you, and then Mars will keep going, and it will finally clear Sagittarius and arrive in Capricorn on September 27th, and then we could say, though it's technically over sooner, that the Mars retrograde cycle moves on, and then in the last part of 2016, there's something really beautiful and unusual, which is that you find, in my opinion, this is fiction, this is me making up a story that I intend to be useful for you, some new ambition, something where you realize you must do something, and you must do something new for yourself as Mars crosses into Capricorn across your solar 10th house. And when it does that, it is joining Pluto also on a long trip across your solar 10th house. And what I would suggest you look for, and I'll end on this note, are the ways in which you have long prepared the territory for this moment. You've done a lot to prepare for this. You're not arriving unprepared, but what you are arriving with is the extra preparation of the genuine inquiry of Mars retrograde in Sag and Scorpio, where you've made up your mind and perhaps, hopefully, come to the conclusion that there's no such thing as a sin, that what you feel and what you want are the right thing, and there's no one who can impose some external ism or squash you with their book or with their threat of whatever, damnation or whatever it may be, in some sly, subtle form, and where you don't need the permission of your parents, be they young or old, dead or alive, often live seeking the permission of our parents, where you take over that process and you proceed in a way that you may have experimented with before, but as far as I can see, with some unusual extra power and influence that is wholly and completely rooted in the self-knowledge that you have gained through the Mars retrograde process. All right. It looks like, to modify what I said at the end of the last session, I'm going to have time tomorrow to do the video summary, the astrology afterthoughts, and then to experiment with doing the tarot in video. We'll see how that that works. I'm not that good at editing video, and I don't want to put a delay between you between now and you getting this. So, but I am going to do it in video. I'll include photos of the spread, and then I will probably hold the cards up to the camera and explain them in groups of one and two and maybe three to give you the idea in a visual sense what's going on. This is an experiment. Let's see how it works. I'll be back in a digital instant with my face and my smile and some ideas for you. Thanks for listening.